The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management or staff of Radio Kingston, WKNY. AM 1490, FM 1079, Kingston, New York.
Give myself to you completely.
Good morning and welcome to Nature Nuggets. It is Saturday at 10 a.m. on Radio Kingston, and this program is all about bringing the more than human world of life into the conversation. These can be pretty dark times for folks who care about such things as the natural world and ecology and ecosystems, but it means that it's all the more important that we celebrate and understand and cherish the incredible natural world that we have around us. And we're so lucky, being here in the Hudson Valley, to have the tidal estuary on one side of us, the Catskill Mountains on the other, and in between, so much biodiversity, so many diverse ecosystems. And so what this show is about is every week taking an hour and bringing in guests to act as our guides. And so we have experts and people who are passionate about nature come in and share their particular insights so that we can maybe understand what we're seeing a little more deeply when we go outside ourselves. And this is all the idea of this show really was inspired by the concept that people won't fight for what they don't love, and they can't love what they don't know. And so with that, abbreviating the introduction a bit this week, because the Who's About Town section, which we're moving into now, we could have the whole show easily be that because of the time of year that it is, mid-April. We're now getting into late April. Extraordinary transformation. The world just feels different than it did just a couple weeks ago. Looking outside right here, you know, the color of the world is now green, and that was not the case just a couple weeks ago. So, but yeah, this month, April, is the 1 year anniversary of this program, Nature Nuggets. And because so much of this show is about, you know, really taking in what is a snapshot and tuning into what's happening in the natural world around us right now, that means that because we've been on the air for a year, that we've come full circle. And so some of the natural phenomenon that we spoke of when we launched this show are coming back into play right now. And so a big one of those for me is the osprey have returned, and it looks like they have, I'm guessing that they have eggs, because if you go down, you know, right at the mouth of the Rondout here in Kingston, up on top of that big rusty crane, they've refurbished the nest after it got battered a bit in the winter, and then, you know, they won't start sitting until all the eggs are laid, because if they did, then, you know, the eggs would hatch out of sync, and you don't want that to happen. You want all your babies to be about the same size. So by the time they're sitting on them, means that all those eggs are probably laid, and those hatchlings could be happening soon. But yeah, I was really struck walking over here. I live right here in Midtown Kingston, and walking over this morning with an umbrella and a raincoat, just by the spring weather roller coaster that we've been on. You know, show before last came over, and it was sleeting and slushing and snowing, and then just last show walking over, it was over 80 degrees, and everything was popping. And then here we have a great spring rain happening this morning. So that's all very typical, and turns the world green. And so the other, of course, you know, major undeniable, besides the greening of the world, phenomenon that's happening around us right now is, of course, spring migration. And the birds are starting to come. You know, this is such an exciting time of year. It really is. Every single day, if you walk outside, you're likely to see a new species that has just arrived, literally fell out of the sky the night before. And so, you know, this isn't full tilt yet. We are definitely seeing an undeniable trickle of birds. The species are expanding, but we're not having, you know, the floodgates are about to open, and that's already happened to the south of us, you can see. And so I looked at Birdcast, right, which is birdcast.info. It's this website where they use advanced radar to track the migration, the movement of migratory songbirds. And over North America, last night, it was predicted that over 200 million birds passed over North America in migration last night, which is only surpassed in amazingness by the fact that tonight the forecast is for over 300 million birds. And tomorrow, the forecast is over almost 400 million. So, you know, billions, literally, of birds are packed into these weeks, moving across the landscape in the nighttime hours. And so some of those, you know, right here that I've seen just in this last week, brown thrashers have arrived. Just this last week, I saw my first northern house wren singing and crashing around in the bush. And then the warblers have really started to come into play. We're lucky here in the Northeast. I forget the number. I think it's 26 species of warbler can pass through our region. So the yellow-rumped warblers are here in numbers. The yellow warblers, which are just incredible little sunbeams, have just started to arrive. And I saw them this week. But also pine warblers, palm warblers, Louisiana water thrush, which is a warbler, skulks around kind of, you know, in the undergrowth by the water. And, you know, looking at eBird, where people record their sightings, you know, I saw that, you know, black-throated green warblers, black-throated blue warblers, oven birds, Nashville warblers, northern parula. I could go on, but you get the idea. These are all different species, totally different colors and behaviors that just arrived, many in the last 24 hours to 48 hours. So, so cool to just see migration in effect. And while, you know, catching a glimpse of some of these little warblers, maybe that are high in trees, might not be something that everyone's going to do every day. But just yesterday, another bird arrived, which is accessible to anybody if you're here, even in, you know, the most urban parts of Midtown Kingston, and that's the chimney swifts. We were out just in our backyard here in Midtown and heard that unmistakable high-pitched kind of chattering in the sky, and looked up and saw them. And these birds are really something else. They're teeny little birds. They move like bats in the sky. They have little saber kind of wings, and they've just flown all the way from South America. That's where they go in the winter. And so, you know, and these are absolute aerial acrobats, and they swarm in the sky, especially if you're in the late afternoon, kind of early evening hours. And, you know, they actually are one of the rare birds that are at this point in history more common often in urban areas than they are out in more wild areas. And that's, their name hints at that. And that's because previously they would have used, you know, hollowed out logs or, you know, certain caves or rock features. But human built chimneys and smokestacks and other structures are so perfect for them that they've all but abandoned, you know, the more natural habitat for their breeding, and they have really swarmed to urban areas. And so, you know, if you see these birds, you know, they're absolute aerial acrobats up there. You might think, because the way that they look at first, that they're related perhaps to swallows or something, but they're actually not. They are their own thing, and they're most closely related to hummingbirds. And these little guys have so surrendered their existence to the sky that they actually have lost the ability to perch. So they are always in the sky, and except when they are breeding or roosting, and that's the point that they do have the ability to kind of grasp onto a raspy surface like a brick or a stone, and they can hold onto it. And they like to be in the dark when they do that, which is why chimneys are so perfect. And luckily, they come here in the warm months, so those chimneys are not being utilized. That wouldn't work out well for them. But anyway, you know, go ahead. If you hear that chattering, you know, look up into the late day sky around Kingston or wherever you are, and you'll almost inevitably hear them. And of course, these are wonderful birds to have around, not just because they're so cool, but because they are voracious predators of little insects. And so they are, you know, a lot of the things that we might consider pests, you know, mosquitoes and flies and beetles that might eat our gardens, these birds are eating them in impressive numbers. Okay, a couple other birds that I will mention because they've really struck my attention this last week. One is that the great blue herons have returned. And they're another one that, you know, if you do see one, they're very hard to miss because they're so huge. But they'll be nesting soon. And, you know, it's so great. You know, this time of year, they really get all dolled up. They've got their bill turns a bright color of yellow. Their face turns this bright white. And then they get this dramatic kind of fancy plume off the back of their head. These are all features that they will lose later in the year. But right now they want to be, you know, impressive for the mating season. And another bird in that category that is easy to observe, and right here, especially right down along the Hudson River, is the cormorants. We've got double-crested cormorants here, and you know they're jet black, and these ones are a little, but if you get a good look, which I was able to do this last week, especially through binoculars, and it only lasts for maybe a few weeks or a month, but it's happening right now. When they're in breeding plumage, they're absolutely amazing. Their face, their exposed skin on their face turns a bright, bright, bright orange, and their eyes turn in this incredible piercing green that almost glows. And then they have this little kind of punk rock double mohawk, which is what they're named for, double-crested cormorant. And again, those are all features that 9, 10, even 11 months of the year aren't present, but right now they are. So yeah, so you know, this is please invitation and inspiration to get outside. There's so many behaviors happening right now with birds that are so specific to the season. You know, they're singing their songs, they're doing elaborate courtship displays, they're fighting with each other to establish territories, you know, they're building nests. I saw the robins yesterday picking up straw out of our backyard and flying off to an unseen nest. And you know, you start to see some things that can make that the term bird brain may have been formed, you know, because right now they're so flooded with hormones and they're driven by this, you know, such a passion to breed that they do some things. You know, I've been seeing the cardinals attacking themselves in the rearview mirrors or the side mirrors of cars recently because they see themselves and they're just flooded with, you know, the desire to defend their territory. And you'll also see some aggression sometimes. This is the time of year geese might chase down kids or blackbirds might attack your head. But these are all because, you know, these are parents being protective of their nests. All right, I'm going to have a couple more nature nuggets. But before I introduce my guest more formally, I want to just acknowledge and say hello, Miranda Javid, for being here in the studio with us this morning.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely delighted you're here. And before we leave the Who's About Town section, I know that you've been out and about lately, and I was hoping you might share what have been some of your Who's About Town moments this past week or two.
Yeah, so my announcement is that yesterday I was able to go kayaking on the Hudson River for the first time in 2025, and that always marks a special moment for me. I love, you know, being out on the water and seeing all the creatures and biodiversity of this region.
How cool. What a unique way to experience that.
Yeah,
being
it's beautiful.
Actually on the water, no motor.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite thing about kayaking is that you kind of end up like walking, using your own calories to kind of propel yourself around. And it's very low key. I love that about it.
That's great. And I'm reminded that Phil Green, environmental specialist for the city of Kingston, who was on the show just a couple weeks ago, let it be known that the city actually will loan you kayaks down at the Kingston Point beach. I think they do it Thursdays and Saturday mornings. But you can find more about that through the city. But so if you don't have your own kayaks, that's a pretty great offering that they actually will let you use theirs.
That's epic.
Yeah.
That's just epic. Yeah. That's cool.
It is. It's very cool. And actually, that reminds me, Who's About Town, to say as well, that today, the 26th, is the first day of the year of the Ulster County Nature Bus. So we've talked about this last summer, but it's so incredible. This is an initiative by Ulster County that's seeking to address issues of inequitable access to nature. We have such incredible parks, scenic Hudson parks, state parks, you know, different preserves around us. But some of them, if you don't have your own car, can be very difficult to, you know, to access. And so these buses are totally free, and they will run starting today throughout the 2025 season. And there's three different routes that go to different areas. They all, two of them anyway, can be picked up right here down at the grocery store at Kingston Plaza, and also I think here in Midtown. But places you can access through the Nature Bus include Sojourner Truth State Park, the Mohonk Preserve, Minnewaska State Preserve, Black Creek Preserve, the walkway over the Hudson. I think Esopus Meadows is also included in there, Kingston Point Beach. So again, you know, this program is entirely free, both for the transportation and for admission to the sites. So you can go on, if you look up, you know, Ulster County Nature Bus or Google some combination, you go right to the schedule because they do alternate routes on Saturdays. So really incredible thing to take advantage of. And okay, before we switch gears, I will just mention a couple more Who's About Towns, because which we really could just spend the whole hour on, but I'm excited to get into speaking about Miranda's work. So I'm sitting here in the studio on Broadway in Midtown Kingston, and if you look out, you can actually see a lot of the shad bush are in bloom. So I'm originally from the West Coast, and so I grew up calling these service berries, and in the Pacific Northwest, they're called Saskatoon, but here they're called shad bush. And that's for a very specific reason. It's because, well, when they're in bloom, it is thought to, that's supposed to signify that it is the moment of the year that the shad, the fish, the shad, are returning to our region. And so, you know, still is of big ecological significance, but used to be, for people who lived here, of great survival significance, because shad are an anadromous fish. They're coming back from the ocean and in large numbers, and they... you know, they can be good eating. And so, you know, I haven't seen any shad yet because they can be hard to observe in person. But seeing that the shad bush are blooming means that they are almost certainly, you know, making that epic journey from the ocean up the 100 miles almost of the Hudson River, and then starting to enter places like Black Creek and the Esopus and Rondout. Yeah, and speaking of the Esopus, I took a great walk a couple days ago into the Esopus Meadows Preserve, just there in, you know, enter from the neighborhoods outside Saugerties. And what a cool place. There's so many different habitats that you can experience in a very short walk. And so I saw lots of neat things. Lots of swallows were back. I was able to come up on a muskrat who I spotted him before he spotted me. And so he was... he was using his little hands to pull down a bush to get to the fresh shoots that were at the end. And then, of course, as soon as he spotted me, let out a little squeal and leapt off the bank into the water where he feels safer. But that was a neat observation. And then also saw bear scat right there, you know, in sight of the suburbs of Saugerties. It was undeniable what it was. There was a big pile of fresh bear scat. So they're definitely out and about right now. I also got spooked myself by a couple of turkeys who popped right out of the bushes right in front of me, and they're so huge, they caught me off guard. That was neat. And then the other thing I've been seeing, I guess three separate times in this past week, are snakes and turtles. I saw actually a pretty gruesome scene right here in the city of Kingston, where I came across right at Kingston Point Park near that little dog park there. Where a garter snake was in mortal combat with a frog, and it looked like it had maybe been going on for a while. The frog was definitely alive but bloodied, and it was sort of this slow motion, high stakes, because they would pause and, you know, and then they would go back at it. And then after a few minutes of watching, I realized there were two snakes involved, and the snakes had different legs, and one was a little bit bigger, and they were fighting over it, and I just was sort of mesmerized, even though it was so gruesome. But eventually the bigger snake won and ripped the frog away from the other snake, who then took off and then set about trying to swallow the frog, which was, you know, obviously it seemed absolutely impossible that snake could swallow that frog because it was so huge. And I did put some pictures, if you're not grossed out by such a thing, Nature Nuggets on Instagram. We have our handle is at HV Nature Nuggets. So there's some video and pictures if you're interested in that.
I love how garter snakes are so easy to be around if you're a human. Like, they're very casual around humans, seem very friendly. I'm never scared when I see a garter snake.
No.
But then you see them do something like that and you just remember there's a food chain here.
I will never look at a garter snake the same. Exactly. I've often, ever since a kid, I've picked them up and handled them. And
sure.
And they're very, you know, often very docile. And But yeah, watching the bloody battle with their fangs ripping apart this frog, I was like, oh, okay. That is also, you are a predator. Okay, I am going to just mention one more thing that I, so yesterday I attended a little summit held at the YMCA right here in Midtown Kingston of the Nature Everywhere. Nature Everywhere is an initiative led by the Children in Nature Network, the National League of Cities, and Kaboom. And it's all about working to increase equitable access to nature for kids and youth in 100 U.S. communities by 2025. And so most of these, in my understanding, are much larger sort of cities and communities. But in the fall of 2023, Kingston was selected to be part of the first cohort of 19 Nature Everywhere communities. And so here in Kingston, the initiative and the core team includes the City of Kingston Parks and Recreation, the Kingston City School District, Wild Earth, the Kingston Y Farm Project, and the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Ulster County. So those organizations were all well represented yesterday, and it was a full room. And it was just, you know, really inspiring, people trying to talk about how to support each other's programs and share resources. And really, the vision is all about, you know, I think that it's said that on average, today's youth spend up to 44 hours a week in front of a screen and less than 10 minutes a day playing outdoors. And so, you know, that has obvious massive impacts on health and well-being, physically, emotionally, developmentally. And so it's well documented, you know, the many, many benefits of taking kids outside. And so all these organizations are working together to with the vision of giving meaningful nature experiences and access to the outside to all kids in Kingston, which is so cool. And finally, before we take a break to hear from the community, I got a great message I'm going to share from Anne Bloomfield. She was one of my original guests on the show, and she's a wildlife ecologist who works out at the Farm Hub. And I think I mentioned the other day, but she recently saw one of the most outlandishly bizarre, unusual birds I could ever imagine seeing in Ulster County, a crested caracara, a giant tropical falcon that shouldn't be thousands of miles away in the desert. But anyway, they have some incredible habitats out there at the Farm Hub, but most of the year it is not accessible to the public. But they once a year open up, and so they're doing that. This May, it's going to be on Tuesday, May 13th. And so you're going to be able to, they open up a whole kind of 1.5 mile loop, and they have different staff and people at different, you know, who can help you kind of understand what you're seeing. But it is free and everyone's welcome. And it goes from, you know, early in the morning to, I think, about 4:30 p.m. 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And so there's so much you can see there. But one of the real unique habitats they have is they've restored some grasslands, which unfortunately are have become very rare in this area. And so there's eastern meadowlarks, possibly bobolinks, savannah sparrows, kestrels, things like that, that are really grassland dependent, that are unusual to see in this area. And you might be able to see if you go out there. Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break to hear some words from the community and then return to the show.
What does community radio mean to you?
Maybe when you're all together and everyone's, when you're all together on the radio and you're having fun and everyone's listening and they're just in it with you. It makes me feel happy.
Radio Kingston, many voices, one community.
Hi, I'm Jill.
Hi, I'm Emma.
We're from the Broadway Bubble at 718 Broadway.
We have a super attentive staff, and we speak English, Spanish, and Kachin.
We have a really nice workspace, kids' space, and snack table.
We offer free salt, free dryers on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays with every wash. And we offer drop-off service and pickup and delivery.
And we're more than a laundromat. We offer year-round programming, including GED classes in both English and Spanish, English classes, Spanish classes, and lots of special events and trainings.
That's the Broadway Bubble at 718 Broadway, open 7 days a week from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m.
To see our calendar events or to schedule a pickup, go to thebroadwaybubble.com.
We are the champions. We are strong. We're vital. And we're a major portion of this country. And Kingston. Hi, I'm Rita Vanacore. Join us at Planet Seniors Monday nights from 8 to 9. We're in a society that's about looking young and being young, but we're here. And we have a voice, and we have a very strong message. Planet Seniors is a community where we feel less vulnerable about dying because we're so vibrantly living. We're talking with people from all walks of life and playing music that makes you get up and move. We're not just talking to our senior population, though. We're talking to all of you. Tune in to see what we have to say. Planet Seniors, Monday nights from 8 to 9 here on Radio Kingston, AM 1490, FM 1079, and anytime at radiokingston.org.
Center for Spectrum Services is hosting their annual Autism Aware Acceptance Gala at Wiltwyck Golf Club later tonight. The theme of this year's gala is Venetian Masquerade, complete with ornate masks, decor, and a menu inspired by Venetian cuisine. The night will feature masquerades-themed games, raffles, and silent and live auctions. Tickets are $145 per person, and the funds go towards this year's Autism Acceptance Fund in Need, the center's Ellenville school students, whose occupational and physical therapy spaces need renovations and refurbishing. Autism Acceptance Gala, tonight, from 6 to 10 p.m. at Wiltwyck Golf Club, 404 Stewart Lane in Kingston. For tickets and more information, visit centerforspectrumservices.org. Welcome back to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland. And I'm delighted to introduce our guest live in the studio with us today. Miranda Javid is the program coordinator with the Woodstock Land Conservancy. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Big fan of the show.
Oh, I love it. Well, I'm delighted to be talking about the work of the Woodstock Land Conservancy today. Very inspiring. But I want to introduce you a little more properly, Miranda. Miranda's role at the Woodstock Land Conservancy is the program coordinator, and that includes curating educational programs, coordinating volunteers, which also includes their land stewards program, which I'm looking forward to hearing more about. And it sounds like on a good week, you get to get out and actually do field work with the stewardship team.
Yes, that's a very exciting part of the work, is that I get to assist the stewardship manager in actually doing stuff to caretake the forest.
Awesome. Well, Miranda's love of the outdoors began managing a community garden to combat food insecurity in Baltimore almost 20 years ago. And when she's not working on environmental conservation, she's probably either gardening, hiking, or drawing with homemade inks in her studio. Miranda holds a BFA from Maryland Institute, a College of the Arts, and an MFA from the University of California, Irvine. She's taught at the college level, founded a volunteer network, and has experience as a volunteer herself with land trusts. And when it comes to both art and ecology, Miranda prioritizes observation and deep listening. She believes that attention is the most important part of learning, and that as humans, it is our responsibility to pay close attention to our impact on planet Earth. I love that. And before we get into the work of the Land Conservancy, I'm hoping you could tell us just a little bit about the path, what your inspiration came from to pursue this kind of work, and the path that led you here.
Yeah, and you know, having listened to the show, I know this is a question you always ask, so I spent the last few weeks thinking about this. What I find so often is paths can be nonlinear, so I'm going to choose an answer to that question, but I think I also want to emphasize that the path can be wobbly, right, and multifaceted. So I think my answer to that question begins in the early aughts when I was living in Baltimore as an artist, and I was sort of being radicalized on multiple fronts. I was becoming aware of deep disparity and inequality in Baltimore City, but also being sort of closer to DC, I was slightly aware of the sort of policy-driven side of climate change. And back then, I was trying to figure out my path, where I could make an impact. And a really important moment for me came from when I participated in a direct action in which the goal was to get arrested. So the goal was to storm into this coal plant next to Capitol Hill, shut the plant down for a day or more, and hopefully get arrested and kind of make a scene, make a fuss about the use of coal as energy. So I go down from Baltimore. It's a cold winter day, you know, protest my heart out. And what I learned that day is that even though we shut down the coal plant, this is maybe 2009, that we got no media coverage. Mm. And the police kind of laughed at us and didn't arrest us. So I came back to Baltimore City, where I was already becoming engaged in several urban farming projects, and realized that local impact was going to be more meaningful to me. And I even see a parallel between getting involved with the actual soil and the microorganisms that live in the soil. So with that kind of failure of the direct action, along with another person, I founded a community garden in Baltimore. And it was kind of like a squatter art project. Like, we found some parts of MTA land, which is the transit authority there, and cleared some invasive shrubs and kind of created a community garden off of the light rail. And if I knew then what I know now, I might do things a little differently as far as eating food off of that land. But at the time, we were trying to address food deserts and kind of create a network of people interested in growing food. And it was that sort of like local action, that very much miniaturization of change, that really transformed me as a person. And I think brings me some circuitous way to the path I'm on now.
Yeah. Well, I love that. And, you know, I have come to usually ask a version of that question, because it always produces some surprise that I didn't expect. And I really appreciate that the urban roots of your, you know, path towards this kind of work, which is so important, because we live in an urban society that is just going further that direction. And so bringing access to nature, bringing inspiration and a lack of fear of nature just at its base to folks who maybe have had mostly an urban experience is critical. And so I really appreciate you bringing that perspective. You also have mentioned, and I really stood out to me in your bio, you know, this concept of sort of deep listening. And to me, you know, that is the root of natural history, right? It's all about observation. And I almost feel like we as humans have this birthright of these senses that were honed over millions of years of, you know, needing them to stay alive in the natural world. And now that we live our lives, you know, in urbanized landscapes and looking at screens, we can sometimes, you know, tune out the sensitivity that we have to it with our eyes and our ears and our noses. And so that experience of slowing down, going outside, and using those senses to really see what you can perceive opens up an entirely new world that you could almost be unaware of. And so I really appreciated that you include that as a core part of your bio.
Yeah, well, I would love to take this opportunity to shout out Pauline Oliveros, who lived in Kingston and is basically a local hero. Like, we're so lucky to have her legacy and work in this community. And Pauline, if you don't know, was an experimental musician who used the term deep listening probably a little differently than I'm using it in my bio, but it's absolutely a nod to her. And I believe her monument is like a block from us here in the studio, right? Mm. And so her concept was deep listening as a way of participating in music making. And what I see in it that I think is relevant to ecology and even like foundational to being a human being interested in ecology is that kind of exchange of sensory input. Like, it's not just about going out there and making a big sound. It's about listening. And that also includes listening and noticing what is here, what already is making sound. And because I worked as a professional artist for over a decade, I also see that as kind of foundational to drawing this aspect of observation. Like, it's very much an exchange. And I think also because I don't have a background in science, but now I'm kind of in this wonderful position of guiding people or introducing them to the outdoors, or, you know, facilitating their love of the outdoors, that that's something I really like to bring to the table, is that question of what's already here. You know, what can we as humans participate in and see ourselves as a part of without just, you know, changing it very quickly and overtly. Observation and listening are extremely important to being in the world.
Yeah, and it really, you know, you don't need any special tools. You know, binoculars are great to have, you know, the right gear to be comfortable. But really, if you step outside and just slow down a little bit, calm the chatter, open the eyes and the ears and tune in, you know, you'll hear something in the bush, something in the sky, and then what is it doing? And then that leads to another layer. And, you know, yeah, that's just how it starts, and that's what it's all based on.
Yeah, and it's a practice, right? Like, sometimes I talk about these things publicly, and I wouldn't want to give the impression that that's always easy and available to me. It takes effort and intention, but I think it's something that just giving a little bit of energy to, you can really build upon it until you're actually, like, hearing more or seeing more, too.
And you mentioned when we were off air, another artist that you're working with, I believe, right now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so as part of my work for the Land Conservancy, I'm trying to bring in that kind of exchange of artists and the outdoors. And I'd say in part, you know, directly inspired by artists like Pauline Oliveros and also Ania Lockwood, who's in the Hudson Valley and does amazing field recording work. We're doing a year-long series with local artist Zanetta. And so Zanetta is going to one of our sanctuaries, Israel Whitman, and producing field recordings. And at times, you know, almost singing or interacting with what she's recording. And then they're putting it together in this kind of collection of sounds that will be released in some form in 2026.
All right. Well, I look forward to that. I mean, that sounds well fit for radio. Okay, well, I'd love to, you know, set a little foundation. Let's talk a bit about what is the Land Conservancy and what's the history there.
Yeah, so the Woodstock Land mm-hmm. Conservancy yeah. Has been around for decades. In 1988, as many land trusts do, it was formed by community members wanting to protect land. So the first preserve was the Zena Cornfield, which, if you don't know it, is kind of a big open meadow with lots of wonderful milkweed and other native plants. And it sits underneath Overlook Mountain. So it has just a breathtaking view that, you know, is hard to come by exactly. So a bunch of citizens came together, basically, like, acquired the land. And then since then, it's grown, and now we have tons of acres in the Woodstock area and other preserves that include trails and beautiful rock outcroppings and all kinds of creatures.
Awesome. So the Zena Cornfield was the original piece of land
yeah.
that people organized around, but now there's some significant other ones, right?
Yeah, so we have Zena Cornfield. There is also Sloan Gorge, which I think is probably the favorite of the bunch as far as what I hear from the community. Sloan Gorge has incredible glacial erratics and lots of notable rock features. We have a place called Snake Rocks, which I like to say is my favorite picnic spot. Mm. Like if anyone's looking to take a romantic significant other on a little journey, it's a short hike up a steep hill, but then you're just kind of secluded at the top of a hill in this old quarry. Very sweet. Snakes are there, but in the good way.
Before you go on, I didn't want to take it for granted that folks will know what a glacial erratic is. And it's such a cool thing. But, you know, I think, you know, this whole area, the whole entire Northeast was covered just 10,000, 12,000 years ago by 1,000 feet maybe of ice. And those giant glaciers would sometimes pick up boulders and move them for maybe hundreds of miles.
Yeah.
And then when they would melt, they would drop and, you know, leave them where they were. So sometimes these are boulders would be impossible to move. They can be giant, you know, stones, and they can be in the most unlikely places because they literally were just dropped in a spot where you can't see where they could have rolled from, how they could have come there. And there's even some, I think, you know, you can see them in Central Park right in Manhattan. But you often, when you see glacial erratics, we'll also see sometimes glacial polish, where if the bedrock is exposed, you can see this, like, just smooth because it's literally been polished by that ice. But Just wanted to slip that in there because yeah. It's such a neat thing.
Well, and one of the cool things about Sloan Gorge, the preserve I was just talking about, is there's a geology tour written by Robert Titus, who wrote a book on, or many books on geology in this region. And so if you go to the preserve and you pick up one of these guides at the kiosk, you can follow kind of the marks of that deep geological time on the rocks.
Yeah, Robert and his partner were guests on the show a little while back. And,
oh, amazing.
They're such wonderful storytellers. They bring just such a animated, you know, a lot of people, maybe more people get excited about birds or plants, you know, but when you find somebody who's really just real rock nerds who can just tell you an exciting story about rocks, that's a real treasure.
Yeah, they're both very charming.
And those two really are wonderful. Okay, so you mentioned the Zena Cornfield, the Sloan Gorge, Snake Rocks, and these are places that are all accessible to the public.
Yeah, so these are our public-facing preserves. I will say there's a ton of land that the Woodstock Land Conservancy manages that the goal is really to protect it, and that includes kind of, you know, having spaces that aren't for humans. But, you know, recreation is a part of the mission of WLC as well, and these are the places where we want you to come and take it in, and where, you know, I'm programming events to help invite that conversation.
It's so great. We are so fortunate to live in an area between Scenic Hudson, between the Woodstock Land Conservancy, between the various different organizations and park systems. The accessibility, you know, to you know, ecosystems and nature here is really an incredible part of life.
Oh, it's amazing. It's my favorite part about being here. This is a very environmentally rich area. I mean, I don't even have to tell anyone that. We all know it, right? Between the mountains and the river and all those resources. I mean, and even the nature bus, you know, helping to bring people from a dense area like Midtown to those spaces.
Well, so tell us some more. I think you were going to mention a couple other preserves.
Oh, sure. Okay, and then there's Israel Whitman Sanctuary, which is kind of the biggest trail system that WLC manages. It has three trails on it, and a fourth will be added next year. That has a lot of great ephemeral pools, a lot of cool frogs right now, and in general, just like a nice walk through the woods. And then I also want to shout out, we have a new preserve opening in the summer of 2025. Mm. It's going to be called Rock Oak Preserve, and rock oak is the local term for chestnut oak, which graces much of this preserve. It's going to be in West Hurley, so you know, we are in Woodstock, in the Woodstock service area, but this will bring us slightly closer to the region of Kingston, and really looking forward to sharing that land with all of you. Because I do the stewardship assisting a couple days a week, I have been spending a lot of time there. I've actually been like helping on the trail build, and it is just an amazing, gorgeous, sunny spot.
Wow, that's great news. I'm glad to hear that and excited to go check it out as soon as it's open. Well, you mentioned that you have a role you play, you know, helping with the land stewards. And can you tell us a bit about what is that program at the Woodstock Land Conservancy?
Yes, I would love to. The WLC Land Stewards is a program, and it's my favorite part of my job. I love working with people, and it's sort of a people-driven side of conservation. So the way it works is interested parties join a cohort, and they're sort of assigned, or they volunteer for a specific site. So, you know, someone might become the Zena Cornfield land steward, and they would share that stewardship with other people. But then beyond that, I think especially because I come from a background in higher education, I'm really interested in the conversation. So it's not just asynchronous volunteering, which stewards also do. That's kind of like the bread and butter of most stewardship. You know, you go once a month and check and clear the trail and that kind of thing. But I try to also facilitate conversation. There's like very active text chains on each of the preserves. And then we get together quarterly at least as a group, including all the stewards at all the preserves, to talk. So the stewards program, you kind of end up being a little bit more in the conversation of what's happening at the preserves, what you're noticing. And what I think is really exciting about this model of volunteering and learning is the way that questions can drive the learning. And, you know, again, I don't have a science background, so I see myself more as a facilitator in these situations. And I really encourage the stewards to figure out what they're looking to know more about. to ask those questions and then to leverage the group, because it tends to be that people who are interested in this kind of thing have a lot of knowledge to share. And so together it kind of becomes this learning club that also tends to get a lot done on volunteer days.
Yeah. So these are, I mean, so these stewards are local volunteers from the community who want to go deeper into these relationship with these places.
Yeah, absolutely. What a cool program. And yeah, so, you know, it's a yearly program. There is a way to kind of roll over and keep doing it with us after the first year, but the next cohort will be assembling in January 2026. But if anyone's interested, you can message me on Instagram. I also do the Instagram, Woodstock_land_conservancy.
Cool. That sounds like a great program. And so that sounds like one sort of elevated way to be a volunteer, but I think there's other volunteer opportunities. There might be less of a commitment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, with the Stewards program, I do try to like kind of ride the line between an asynchronous opportunity for volunteering and these kind of more regular offerings. But yes, of course, there's lots of ways to volunteer. And I would say one could also message me through the Instagram to ask more about that. We also have a new volunteer form on our website. But most of the time, that that style of volunteering means coming to our quarterly volunteer days and then also getting, you know, messages here and there about other opportunities.
How do people go to the website, I'm guessing? If folks
want? Sure. The website is woodstocklandconservancy.org.
Great. Well, I'm so glad you brought up the announcement of a new preserve that's opening this summer. That's exciting. And I'm wondering, you know, looking forward, you mentioned it's been, what, 88, so many decades of operation. And now the Woodstock Land Conservancy seems to be a pretty well-established entity in the region. And I'm wondering, you know, what are some of the kind of main conservation priorities that you see in our area in the coming years?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are many. I'll answer sort of personally what I see as a major priority in conservation and something I'm definitely hoping to bring more awareness to through programming. I think there's a really important need to understand the ways that environmental conservation can work in tandem with affordable housing. And, you know, this region, which is so wonderful, is, you know, unfortunately, becoming more and more expensive to live in. And I think historically, environmental conservation can be seen as something that's very separate from that, that sees like sort of this separation between humans and nature spaces as absolute. And while there is sort of environmental reason for that, I personally think that the crisis of affordable housing mixed with the crisis of climate change requires us to think creatively about that and to also understand that we are part of nature. So I am hoping to program more speakers and thinkers in that space, because I think understanding how it's possible, understanding the ways that housing and green spaces can coexist, you know, what are the stakes, and, you know, how does it also affect different communities disproportionately, is something that I see as not resolved at all yet. And something that I think we need to have a lot more conversation about in this region, especially.
Yeah, I really am glad for that answer. You know, seeing the crises as separate and the opportunities as separate, it does feel like an illusion. And we need the groups that are working on different facets of those problems to be talking with each other, collaborating with each other, sharing resources, coordinating. Yeah.
Yeah, and I want to say, like, I mean, there are times that it can be more complicated than this, but I think so often it is the siloing that makes different parties unaware of each other's needs and crises. Like, making that conversation more interdisciplinary, I think, would create more exposure and more just awareness in general.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to take a brief break to hear some more words from the community, and then we're going to return to our conversation with Miranda Javid from the Woodstock Land Conservancy.
Are you getting enough veggies in your diet? Did your mom always say to eat your vegetables? Hi, this is Christine Hine, Executive Director of People's Place, and I want to help your mom. If you're an Ulster County resident and feel you're in need, come to our weekly free farm stand. We're here every Tuesday morning from 9 until 11 a.m. in our parking lot at 17 St. James Street. Each week we distribute fresh produce, much of which is donated by Hudson Valley Farms. You don't need ID, but you do need to bring your own bag. This program is in partnership with the Food Bank of the Hudson Valley and the Hudson Valley Farm Hub. Together, People's Place is making healthy produce more accessible to all our neighbors and making our moms proud. For more information, contact People's Place at 845-338-4030 or visit us at peoplesplace.org.
Greetings, blessings, and salutations, and I'm inviting you to the Miss V Show, the musical journey for your soul, on Saturday nights from 8 to 10 p.m.
Show me love.
You are love, you are loving, and you are lovable. Take a break for love.
Now that I am love.
Now that I am love. Love is you.
Saturday Night Love on Radio Kingston, 1490 AM, 107.9 FM, and anytime on radiokingston.org.
Welcome back to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland, and we're joined in the studio today with Miranda Javid, who is the program coordinator for the Woodstock Land Conservancy. And we've been talking about the amazing work of the Land Conservancy, and I want to take the moment to say that if you've just caught a little bit of this conversation and you want to hear the whole thing, this episode will be archived, as well as all of our other episodes, which are up to about 50 conversations with amazing people locally and regionally. And under Nature Nuggets on the RadioKingston.org website, you can find all of those kind of in podcast form. And you can also follow us if you're interested on Instagram. HV Nature Nuggets is our handle there. And then finally, if you want to reach out to the show directly, we have an email as well. If you have a guest you'd like to hear on air or a burning nature question that we might be able to help answer, you can contact us directly, naturenuggets@radiokingston.org. So with the few minutes left that we have on the program, Miranda, I wanted to make sure, I'm hoping people leave with nothing else but an inspiration to get outside. This is probably, might be the best time of year where it's warm enough to be comfortable and everything's happening and full of life, but it hasn't gotten sort of that oppressive summer heat yet. It's just a really nourishing and enlivening time to get outside. And I know that, the Woodstock Land Conservancy in particular offers a bunch of opportunities for people. And so I'm hoping you can highlight what are some opportunities this spring and summer that people could take advantage of to get outside.
Yeah, so many exciting things. So in addition to our annual fundraiser, which is May 17th, we have a bunch of educational workshops coming up. We have Historic Lenape Land Stewardship that's happening at Zena Cornfield, which according to the Alf Evers book, Woodstock is a historic site of Lenape agriculture. So that should be very informative and exciting. We have basic chainsaw skills. We have wildflower watching, which is going to focus on milkweed. We have a nature poetry meetup in July, moonlight moth viewing. And actually, Robert Titus is going to come and do a talk on deep geological time at Sloan Gorge later this summer. For a schedule of all those workshops and to RSVP, I think the easiest way to do it would, again, just be to go to our Instagram and click our link tree, but you can also go to woodstocklandconservancy.org and click events, and you'll see those listed. They fill up. I mean, I've been very lucky to find that most of these workshops reach capacity rather quickly. So do RSVP and sign up if you'd like to come. We'd love to have you.
That's great. From poetry to moths to geology, that's quite a dynamic range of offerings.
That's what we're going for.
That's great. Well, and I do want to take a put it in a plug too. There's, so many other, I would encourage folks to go to the John Burroughs Natural History Society website. They have every single weekend, often two in a weekend, free, usually offerings for birds, ecology, botany, really just, people who, are knowledgeable about the outside and willing to take their weekend and do public walks. So lots of different opportunities in the area. And so you know, Miranda, you've let us know about some of the, and you've got me inspired to go out to Sloan Gorge and Snake Rocks and the Zena Cornfield and some of the amazing places that the Woodstock Land Conservancy has protected. But I know that you are an outdoors person in general, and I'm hoping maybe you could share what are some of your favorite spots, especially this time of year, to get out in general.
Yeah, other than the WLC spots, I have a lot of great places to name. I live in Esopus, so I'm kind of an Esopus-centric nature enthusiast. So I love Esopus Meadows, High Banks Preserve. I'm glad you shouted out John Burroughs. That's a great site, too. And I think earlier in the program, you even mentioned Black Creek as a place that the nature bus goes.
Yeah.
And Black Creek just expanded a little bit. There's a new part of the waterfront trail.
Yeah.
Really been enjoying that lately. And then before we started, we were talking about Sleightsburg Park, which I think is technically somehow still in Kingston city limits, but it's like in the Esopus chunk. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think not. But I think Sleightsburg is the most magical spot for birds that I go to regularly in this area.
It really is. That is on my rotation of one of my absolute, you know, I try to do it weekly because it changes so much. Yeah, that's a really special spot. And yeah, as you mentioned, Black Creek did just have a significant expansion. And now the mouth of the Black Creek, where it goes into the Hudson, is now publicly accessible. And it's just like an entirely different place. It's very...
Yeah, and they're doing that eel project there too, which I would love to know more about, but I've seen the signs. So it seems like they're doing some important research in the creek.
Yeah, you can contact Scenic Hudson or go on their website and look it up. And it's in partnership with the DEC. I've gone down there and done it. It is a very cool experience. You get to see the transparent glass eels, as they're called, which are just 5 or 6 inches long and otherwise almost impossible to observe. But they build these special weirs that they get trapped in. They don't get harmed, though, but you get to pull them out, see them, count them, and then release them. And yeah, they've just arrived from, you know, the Bermuda Triangle on ocean currents for thousands of miles, all the way up from the tropical seas, you know, through the off across the Atlantic, up the Hudson, and then turning into the creeks. One of the great sort of migration phenomenons of you know, wildlife in the world.
Yeah, and it's still very mysterious to us, right? Like,
yeah,
we don't know everything about eel migration yet.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's actually going to be an event, I believe it's May 31st, there will be an official you know, celebration of the opening of the new part of Black Creek. And so that'll be a great day to come out. There'll be little public birding stations, and you know, different people will be there to help interpret, and it'll be a great day for folks of, you know, all interest levels and all ages to come out. I'm planning to be down there myself, you know, helping to do some birding. And then also, you know, it's auspicious. They are in the process of creating, I think it's a 12-mile trail that's going to connect many of these reserves. So you've got Shopanique Ridge, you've got the slab sides, John Burroughs Sanctuary, and then you've got various other sort of protected pieces of land, and then coming down to the Black Creek Preserve itself.
No way.
And they're going to be piecing these all together into a cohesive trail system.
Whoa, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm genuinely so excited about that. And I'm glad you mentioned Shopanique too.
Yeah. And Shopanique, I just saw, I didn't mention earlier, but this week, the other thing, of course, all the trees are leafing out, but the tulip trees are having their moment right now. And of course, their leaves get, you know, bigger than your hand, but right now they're just about 3/4 of an inch, but they're already the full shape of, you know, and those tulip trees, just, you know, really special. And that trail, the lower part, I think it's called the White Trail of Shopanique Ridge, of that preserve, is a tulip forest.
Yeah.
And it's one of the few places, only place I know in the area, that it's almost a pure stand. There's other trees in there, but dominated by those tulip trees. And the birds seem to have a particular affinity in the springtime for that kind of habitat.
Yeah. Great waterfall, historic site. Love Shopanique.
Yeah. Well, this has been such a pleasure talking with you, Miranda, and I hope folks will check out the work they're doing at the Woodstock Land Conservancy and take advantage of some of these offerings and volunteer things that are happening. But most importantly, just get outside. You know, we all need it. The promise, if you spend an hour outside, it'll change the whole course of your day. And especially if you have kids, you know, and so, yeah. get outside in the spring and look forward to returning on the air. Chris Baker from Chicory Naturalist is going to be taking over the show next week, and I will be back on the air the week after that. So thanks again, Miranda.
Thank you for having me.
To you completely.